Whatever became of Buffalo Bob Smith?
My name is Richard Lamparsky, and this program is a remote, not, however, from Dutyville. We're in New Rochelle, New York. My guest, as you might have guessed, is Buffalo Bob Smith. And I must confess, Mr. Smith, on this program, it's the only program I've ever done that I haven't researched myself, because I was out earning a living when you were one of the number one children's star on television and radio.
So was I.
So I really don't recall your program, but I have very good researchers. They're kids who were tuned in, I think, every afternoon by the time they got back from school, and some who weren't old enough to go to school. And they told me all about Howdy Doody.
Good.
And they all said how much they miss it and gave me a raft of pictures to give you and even a yearbook from Pennsylvania University, as you know.
Wonderful.
To sign. So tell us, first of all, what you're doing.
Well, right now I'm doing several things. When Howdy went to one a week, which was in 1957, I opened a liquor store in New Rochelle right around the corner from where I live. And I still have that. And I've been building condominium apartments down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I own a radio station up in Maine.
You're rich.
Up in Calais, C-A-L-A-I-S. Did you ever hear of it?
Yes.
It's about a city of maybe 5,000 people, 100 miles northeast of Bangor, right on the St. Croix River, which separates Maine from New Brunswick, Canada. And I think the interesting part of our station, we're the only station in the country that gives two time signals, because right across the St. Croix River is Atlantic time. So when we give a time signal, we say it's 20 minutes after 10 Eastern, 11 Atlantic.
Do you ever appear on your station?
Well, I occasionally do. The day I bought it, I'll never forget, I did a radiothon, marathon, or whatever you want to call it. I was on from 6 in the morning until 10 in the evening. Had a lot of fun.
Were you raising money for a charity?
The Smith Fund. Well, I do special shows for service people. I'm a Rotarian, and the Rotarians always have a big talent show that I usually do every summer when I'm there. And mostly I work on old commercials for institutional accounts up there.
There's a big name from radio who lives in Maine. I don't know the exact town. Philip H. Lord.
Oh,
ever
Seth
run into
Parker.
Him? Hmm. Right. Yes,
no.
He was originally Seth Parker, and then he had Gangbusters and Counter Spy.
Oh,
but he's up there. He has some kind of a boat business.
Didn't know it, Richard.
Yeah, somebody, when I did my Whatever Became of Gangbusters show, the actors who were on it told me he was up there. Now, according to my records, Howdy Doody began December 27th, 1947. Is that right?
Oh, you're right on the nose. Yeah, the day
see how good
the big,
those kids are?
It was the day after the big snowstorm. Do you remember that?
Yes.
In Buffalo at the time? In New York?
Yeah. Yes, it was.
It was a dandy.
Yeah. I wasn't in here. I remember the pictures of the cars buried and the telephone lines down.
Yeah, well, I'll never forget. I was doing the morning show on NBC at the time. I was on from 6 until 9 in the morning. And that Friday, my wife called me and she said, don't try to make it home if you want to get in tomorrow morning. Because I had the morning show to do on Saturday, and then at 5 o'clock was our first Howdy show. So, of course, I stayed in. I believe I was in New York for about 5 or 6 days. Every morning I'd have to go out and buy a suit of underwear, another pair of socks, another shirt, another tie and handkerchief. It was really quite a thing. But that's one way of remembering Howdy Doody's, what do we say?
Well, it certainly wasn't a bad omen.
It was a good one.
It was on until what, 1960?
Until September 30, 1960.
Huh? You must run into an awful lot of kids who recognize you on the street, because you begin with, you don't look any different than you did then. I don't know what we're going to do when I publish my book. Incidentally, this is the first recorded segment of the new book, so you're getting a preview of Volume 2, Whatever Became Of, which
we
did publish by Crown in about February 1968.
Good.
And so we'll take some pictures today.
Fine.
So what are we going to do? Because you look the same.
That's cute. Well, actually, I really love the type of thing I'm doing now. I don't have to be anywhere at any given set time. You know, the radio station runs without me, so does the liquor store, so do the apartments, but I'm plus value in all the ventures that I go into, you see.
Do you miss it, television?
Not really. I would like to, if I ever did go back, I would like to go back, be a spokesman for some company, do their commercials. I think I could do a good job on this in that I could handle sales conventions and things like that, I think, quite well.
In one of the books on television, there have been several published recently. I think it was called How Sweet It Was. It said that, and I'm asking you now if this is true, did expectant mothers really write in and say that they were going to have a baby in such and such a month and they wanted to reserve tickets?
Exactly. I'd say we were at least 2.5 years behind. You see, we only seated 40 kids in the peanut gallery. And we just got thousands of requests every day because the kids, let's face it, were seen on camera. It'd be nice to call Aunt Millie in Ohio and say, watch little Judy. She's going to be on the Howdy Doody show. As a matter of fact, a lot of grandmothers wrote and told us this is the first time they'd ever seen their grandchildren was on the Howdy Doody show. Where it was, you know, difficult. I mean, if a grandmother lived in Denver and the kids lived in Ohio or someplace, and it was difficult to get there. And they said the first time they ever saw their whatever was on the Howdy Doody show.
As a matter of fact, the person who told me where you were, the first one to give me a clue was Paul Tripp, Mr. iImagination.
Oh, sure.
Because he was on the program, about a year ago, I guess, and we started talking about you, and he said, well, he thought you were in New Rochelle. So I know a lady who used to live in New Rochelle, Mrs. May. She just moved about a year ago, and she said, oh, yes, he has a liquor store because my boy, Cliff, was on the program on such and such a year.
Talking about tickets, Richard, we had one funny that we like to tell. We used to seat about 40 kids, but then once in a while, if a good friend would say, can you get them on? I'd say, well, there are no tickets, but I'll tell you what you do. Have them in my dressing room at 5:15, and I'll sneak them in. Well, I'd sneak one in, somebody else would sneak three in, and we wound up having 40 kids and about 19 sneakers, you see. So the fire department laid the law down to us. They said, now look, you can only have 40 people in this studio. So there were 40 tickets issued, and no one got in that gallery without a ticket. So one day I got a call from Niles Trammell, who at the time was the president of the National Broadcasting Company. And Niles called me at about 4:30, and he said, Bob, he says, I'm in trouble. I said, well, he said, I've got a kid who's got to get into that peanut gallery tonight. And he said, there are no tickets available. He said, I've called station relations. I've called guest relations. He said, what do I do? And I said, well, look, Niles, I said, we're not allowed to do this. Now, I'm talking to the president of NBC. I said, if it's important, I said, you have your secretary have this little fella or little girl in my office at 5:15, and I'll see if I just can't say that he's a child actor going to be in a commercial, you see, because this happened once in a while as far as the firemen were concerned. So he said, all right. I said, what's his name? He said, Herbert Hoover III. And his grandfather, the president, was in Mr. Trammell's office watching the program as we went on the air. Herbert Hoover III. Is that funny?
Were you impossible to live with?
I know, we always think that's one of the cutest ones that ever came.
It's the most flattering thing I've ever heard.
Isn't that wonderful? Yeah.
Tell me, was Howdy Doody your idea? Did you think of the dummy Howdy Doody? You see, I didn't even know it was a dummy. When they said Howdy Doody, I thought that you were Howdy Doody, and they had to explain the whole thing to me.
Fortunately, yes, it was my idea, and secondly, he was not a dummy, he was a puppet.
Oh, there's a difference?
Well, a puppet has strings.
Oh.
See, Charlie McCarthy is a dummy.
Yes, now Charlie McCarthy's my era, you see.
Yeah, well, he sits on Edgar Bergen's knee, so he's a dummy. But a puppet is on strings.
I see.
The way it came about, I was doing a children's show on radio on Saturday morning called Triple B Ranch. The three B's stood for Big Brother Bob.
This was a local show?
This was local New York radio, WEAF at the time. I don't know if you go back that far. It was WEAF, and then WRCA, and then WNBC, which it is now. Well, this was back on Weave. And I did this morning show from 9 till 9:30 Saturday morning. And I had a writer who was very clever. And I wanted to do a little comedy on this show. It was basically a kid show where I'd have four kids from a school vie against four kids from another school. And I'd do a little comedy routine with this Mortimer Snurdish type character. I'd say, hi, Elmer. And he'd say,
well, howdy doody.
How are you, Elmer?
Oh, pretty good, Mr. Smith.
And that was the first howdy voice, really. His name was Elmer, But the first thing he'd say when he came on the air, he'd say,
"Well, howdy doody."
So then the kids would come down and see the show. And they would be disappointed that I didn't have a dummy or a puppet for a radio show. It was just a voice. And they didn't say, "Where's Elmer?" They'd say, "Where's Howdy Doody?" So the kids actually named him. So I got the idea, well, if the kids would like to see this Howdy Doody, let's get a television show and we'll make a puppet. So I went to Owen Davis Jr., who at the time was one of the top boys in NBC television, and Warren Wade, and told him about this, and they watched the show the following week, and they said, yeah. So we had a puppet made. We called him Howdy Doody, and that was December 27, 1947.
Was that network?
Yes, it was network, if you can call it network. It was the NBC network at
That's
the time.
That's right, 47.
Which was six stations. Mm. It was Boston, New York, Washington, Baltimore, Schenectady, and Philadelphia.
That was before, what was the, we used to call it, the coaxial cable?
Wasn't that it? Before the coax, before the east-west cable, that's right.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that in years.
As a matter of fact, I think the biggest success story that Howdy Doody can tell, actually the first big success story, 48 was an election year. So we decided to run Howdy Doody for president of the kids in the United States.
I've got a note here to ask you about that, because the chief announcer, this will make you feel old, the chief announcer on the station that originates these broadcasts goes way back, right to the beginning of Howdy Doody. Robbie Barish, who researched most of the program, doesn't remember this, and he said to ask you about the time Howdy Doody ran for president, so you go ahead.
All right, well, we ran Howdy Doody for president.
He was a write-in, as I recall.
Against Mr. X. He was the opponent. So we got these "I'm for Howdy Doody" buttons. Here was a little pitch button that you stuck into your coat lapel with a picture of Howdy on it. And on the top of it, "I'm for," and on the bottom, "Howdy Doody." So I said to the boss, "Now look, why don't we have some buttons? You want some kind of a mail story so that we can go out and sell the show?" And he said, I'd love it. And I said, "Well, how many buttons do you think I could give away?" And he said, "Well, what's it going to cost us?" So we found out, I forget what the exact cost was, but we'd mail it and everything, and maybe they cost 12 cents a piece with the button and the mailing and the handling. So he said, "Well, I guess we can go for maybe 10,000. So I said, "Okay." So we came up with a song, "I'm for Howdy Doody, are you?" And the kids would holler, "Yes, I am." Now they'd go, "I'm for Howdy Doody, the finest boy in the land," and so forth. This is our campaign song. So he said, "All right, now, you kids, if you're for Howdy Doody, you write it, and we'll send you your I'm for Howdy Doody button. Now, send in right away. We don't know how many we'll have, and we give the address." Monday morning, we get a call from Boston. 4,000 requests, Philadelphia. 8,000 requests, Washington, Baltimore. 6,500 requests, New York. 14,000 requests. I thought I lost my job. We had over 80,000 responses in 3 days from six stations. But the payoff is there were only 40,000 sets in the six cities. So our response was more than 2 to 1 for each television.
Of course, in those days, you used to go to your neighbor's house to watch television. I remember that.
That's the bit. 10 kids would watch, and 10 kids would send. Well, this is the greatest response in the world. The following week, we were sold out completely. Colgate bought 2 spots, Kellogg's bought 2 spots, and boom. I think inside of 3 weeks, Howdy Doody was sold out.
Well, I hope you were one of the programs that sent these things out to kids, because I used to write in for the radio offers, you know, to the Green Hornet for the glow-in-the-dark ring. I never did get that.
Well, we certainly sent every kid, and if not, they can call me up, because I've got 864,000 more buttons in the air. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I collect them, so I would like to have one of those. But I have one complaint about you, because the same fellow, the chief announcer, never got his ring.
Oh, no.
The Howdy Doody ring, because I brought in the Howdy Doody spoon. I collect teaspoons.
I think you're talking about the Cap'n Video ring. No, I'm not.
No, he said he thought it was a ring. And I said, "Well, I have a Howdy Doody spoon, which I won't give you, but I'll show you. You remember the Howdy Doody spoon?"
I really don't.
Well, I stirred my tea with it this morning. Anyway, you better give him a button and make him feel better. Maybe,
all right.
Maybe in place of the ring. Tell me how the characters, and I have to look at my notes here, how they came about. Phineas T. Bluster, who I understand was the heavy.
All right, well, now you've got it spelled incorrectly. You've got F-I-N. It was P-H.
All right.
Only because he was named after P.T. Barnum, who was Phineas T. Barnum, you see. And this was a blustering character. He'd talk like this. So Phineas T. Bluster was Howdy's enemy, constant enemy.
And they said that he was the...
He was terrible.
Now, Princess Summer, Fall, Winter, Spring.
Oh, the most... Probably the most beautiful girl I think I've ever seen in person in my life was Judy Tyler.
Steve Post tells me also that she was killed in an automobile accident.
That's the original. Right. The original Judy Tyler came with us, oh, I'd say in about 1952, probably. Judy worked, just sensationally well. Kids loved her. Really a beautiful girl. Sang, danced. And then she asked for a 6 months leave to do a part in the Rodgers and Hammerstein Broadway show Pipe Dream with Madame Schumann Hank. And she did that. She did a fine job.
Excuse me, I think you mean Helen Trouble.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, certainly Helen Trouble. Forgive me. Forgive me. Yes, Helen Trouble, right? On the strength of her success in that show, she was given an opportunity to play in a movie with Elvis Presley called Jailhouse Rock, which she did. Did such a great job in that. 20th Century Fox, I believe it was. Signed her to a 2-year contract where she would make at least 4 pictures. She married a fine young man out in the West Coast. She had about a month's hiatus before she went into more production of films. Her booking agent had 4 or 5 guest shots lined up for her in New York television, like, What's My Line or whatever. And both she and her husband were killed in Billy the Kid, Wyoming, on July 4th in 1956. Mm. I'll never forget, I was at the country club with my wife and kids. We were watching the fireworks, and I came home, and it was AP or UP or one of the wire services calling me for a bio on Judy, and of course, I... She was most talented.
Now, the next one was Dilly Dally, who was a stooge and friend of Howdy Doody.
He was my favorite puppet.
He could wiggle his ears.
He sure could, either one at a time or both. Dilly Dally, yeah, done by Bill LaCornick, who was a very clever puppeteer.
Now, let's see. It said you had comic books and T-shirts. I do remember the T-shirts, seeing kids with them. Your boy was not wearing one today.
Well, my kids at the time, Robin and Ronnie. Robin is now 25 and a medical student at the University of Buffalo. Ronnie is a broker. They were born in 43 and 41, so they were 6 and 4 when Howdy started, so they grew up all the way through it, you know. And they wouldn't wear anything Howdy Doody because the kids in the neighborhood would tease them. They'd much rather their daddy was a garbage man than Buffalo Bob.
Did they watch you, though, when you were on?
Intently. And my wife said they never called me Dad. I was always Mr. Smith on the show. Because Clarabelle would squirt me, you see. He'd run behind me with a seltzer bottle and squirt me. And the kids in the peanut gallery say, "Look out, Mr. Smith, look out." My wife said, "Robin and Ronnie be right up there. Look out, Mr. Smith, look out."
Well, that's a great tribute to your acting ability.
Yeah, I was Mr. Smith when I was on television. Then we dropped that and called it Buffalo Bob. For one reason, I never wanted kids to have to show respect. As soon as a kid's born, he has to show respect. It's got to be Uncle Vic, Aunt Mary, Uncle Carl. The teacher is Miss or Mrs. And it. So I didn't want to be Mr. Smith. So I wanted to be one of them. So we took on the title of Buffalo Bob.
You mentioned Clarabelle. Now, he is Captain Kangaroo, is that correct?
Our first Clarabelle was Bobby Keeshan, who is now Captain Kangaroo.
He was a clown?
That's right. He was a clown for about, he was with us for, 4 or 5 years. And then we got probably the greatest Clarabelle in the world, and Lou Anderson, who is now one of the Honey Dreamers, the vocal group.
Oh, really?
Wouldn't you really rather have a beauty? Yeah. He wrote all that. He's very clever.
Now, the other one is John J. Faduzel.
Faduzel, America's number one boing private eye.
I'm glad you did that. It said, be sure to do that.
Oh, you have that all.
Yeah, and I couldn't do that the way you did.
Well, actually, the only character I ever did, rather, the only voice that I ever did was Howdy Doody and his grandfather, Grandpa Doody.
Now, Clarabelle, it said, I'm again referring to my notes, as a clown. He's the first was was now Captain Kangaroo.
Right.
Is that the correct name?
Bobby Keeshan, that's right.
Right. And his weapon was a seltzer bottle.
It sure was.
Right.
And I got it.
He never spoke, but had a horn like Harpo Marx.
He had a yes and a no horn. A yes horn was a very sharp horn, and a no was a horn. So we'd know how he felt, at least.
Now, the next character, Cornelius J. Cobb.
Yeah, Corny Cobb.
Was that in Dutyville?
Oh, yes, he was the storekeeper. That was Bobby Nicholson. Bobby Nicholson, very, very clever fellow. He and I courted twins in Buffalo when we were 15 years old, believe it or not. And I brought him to New York. Oh, actually, he was our second Clarabelle, excuse me. Bobby Nicholson was Clarabelle for a few years. And then we decided he had too much talent to hide him in a clown suit and have him a mute. And he played many instruments and sings very well. So we invented this Corny Cobb character. And then we got Lou Anderson to come in and be our third Clarabelle.
When we were talking a few minutes ago about Howdy Doody running for president, I wanted to ask you, did he get any write-in votes?
Oh, he got more votes than Wallace. He actually got more write-in votes than Henry Wallace did. Yes, he certainly did.
Is there a Doodyville any place that you know of? I thought maybe he was so popular, I thought maybe a little town might have changed their name.
No, we were talking long ago where the Cross County Center is now of making this a Doodyville, which was way in anticipation of what Walt Disney did with his Disneyland. We were going to really have a Doodyville.
When your former viewers come in and are able to buy a pint of whiskey without... does that make you feel old?
That's funny. Well, funniest thing is when we had our 10th reunion on the Howdy Doody show, our 10th anniversary, I should say, and fortunately, we kept the names of the first kids who were on our first show, and I believe we had, I think, 27 of the original 40 kids in the first Howdy Doody show, and I think of the 27, 24 were married. Can you imagine that? Because think the kids were 12, 13, 14, and then 10 years later, they were 24 and married with children.
Now, I was supposed to find out what flub-a-dub consisted of. They knew a duck was the primary ingredient.
Right? Well, the flub-a-dub was eight animals in one.
That was the pet, Howdy Doody pet.
That's right, the flub-a-dub. Now, let's see. You had a duck's bill, a duck's bill, the body of a dachshund, the ears of a spaniel, pig's tail, seal's flippers, giraffe's neck, and the memory of an elephant. Or something.
I won't ask you what Flubbadub Jr.
Oh, that's right. Flubbadub Jr. was just a tiny Flubbadub. Very cute. Yeah, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, the same fellow, I'm speaking now, the older man, Steve Post, said that he remembered when Howdy Doody first began that he looked quite different than the Howdy Doody that emerged. He said he seemed to remember that he went on a trip around the world or something and came back a rather dapper Howdy Doody, much better groomed than he began.
What happened was the first puppet we had was made in a hurry. As a matter of fact, we did the first three shows without a puppet. I'll take this step at a time. The first show we came on the air, we didn't have a puppet because we found out Tuesday that we were going to be on the air Saturday. So I worked at a desk, and I talked for Howdy Doody with my hand over my mouth, and Howdy was supposed to have been in the drawer of my desk, and he was embarrassed and bashful. He didn't want to come out and see the kids. So I'd say, "You in there, Howdy?" And the camera would take a shot of the drawer closed and say, "Come in here, Buffalo," like this, you see. Then we did this for another week, and finally the third week we had the Howdy Doody, and then we had the puppet in the drawer as we came on the show. I opened the drawer, and the puppeteer pulled him out, and then he saw the kids. So we decided this wasn't a very good face because someone wanted to make a Howdy Doody doll. And the first Howdy, Chris, get the picture of the first Howdy. It's hanging in my den. It was pretty ugly. So we decided that we'd get a better looking Howdy and how to do this. Well, Howdy at the time, here's the first Howdy Doody. Now, you'll have to admit that's quite ugly, isn't it?
Yes, I would.
Isn't that pretty terrible? If this were television, shall I hold the mic up so the kids can see it, the people listening? Look, people, here's Howdy. Ugly. All right. So we decided if we were going to license this fellow, we'd need a little better look. So we decided Howdy was running for president, now don't forget. So he saw Mr. X, his running opponent, who was a very handsome man. We had in mind Tom Dewey because Dewey was really running in 1948.
Dewey was very dapper.
Oh, he certainly was. So when Howdy Doody found out that his opponent, Mr. X, was such a handsome person... Here, Chris, my 12-year-old son, he's running pictures. Put Howdy back on the wall. Howdy decided he was going to have a little facelifting job. Done, you see. So Howdy would talk to us every day by our... Oh, what did we call it? I don't know, some kind of a machine, a phonodoodle or something, that he'd talk to us. And actually, what we were doing is stalling to have another puppet made. So we had another head made, which was the present head. And then Howdy finally appeared. The sponsor said, hey, come on, we've got to get Howdy on that show. So we took a regular puppet and just bandaged his head, you see. And this was Howdy, so Howdy would be there, but you couldn't see his face because he wasn't finished yet. So finally, when Howdy was really finished, we bandaged the real face, and he came on with the bandages with the good news that the bandages come off today. So we took the bandages off the air, and then the kids finally saw the present Howdy Doody for the first time.
That probably led to better grooming throughout kindergarten and grade schools in America.
You better know it.
What would you like to, if you could choose anything you could be doing now, what would you like to be doing?
Well, I'd like to be back in television or radio, but only in one aspect of it, Richard, and that would be, as I said, I think, earlier, a commercial spokesman for a good company. I mean, like Dennis James does the Kellogg commercials. Bill Lundigan used to be the Chrysler boy. Betty Furness was the Westinghouse girl. I think I could do a fine job for a client in that I have such a built-in audience. These kids are with me for 13 years and now really the buying public today.
Well, they're very loyal to you.
That's right.
I will attest to that.
You mentioned that University of Pennsylvania show. That was the greatest show I ever did in my life, and I did it last November.
That was the brother of Peter Schaefer who drove me out, Richard Schaefer.
All right.
A student there.
Well, one of the students got to me, and would I possibly get a kinescope from the year 48? So I happen to have two kinescopes. Because NBC didn't have them, they threw them all out, and I grabbed some prizes, you know, some breakups that, oh, some funny shows, or we laugh for 5 minutes, you know. And I sent them these two, and he said, incidentally, he said, would you want to come out? I said, what are you going to do? So he told me they were having a howdy-doody week there. So my wife and I drove to Pennsylvania, and I never had a better time in my life. No one told anybody that I was going to be there, and I wore the Buffalo Bob suit. First, they showed the two kinescopes of the Howdy, and the kids, Joe, laughed. It's so funny to watch television from 20 years ago. And I walked out on that stage, and I'm telling you, I never had such a reception in my life. I planned to do we did all our, who's the funniest clown, you know, Clarabelle. Well, they loved all this stuff. And they asked me some questions, and believe it or not, I did a question and answer bit for about an hour and a quarter. And these are, well, all college and graduate students. These are all kids averaging an age from, I'd say, 21 to 26, 7, 8. It was fantastic.
You made the transition from radio, because you were a radio man, before you went into television. Was television as much fun as radio used to be when it began, that is, in 47, 48, 49? Was it always so hectic? It is now.
It was hectic. I'll tell you, actually, when we started, we hardly rehearsed at all, I must confess, because we didn't have time. We couldn't afford to rehearsal. We'd practically talk through everything. I mean, we'd have talk-throughs with the camera crew. Then, of course, the latter years, oh, boy, from 55 on, every show we did was in color. And, boy, we'd take an hour to rehearse each commercial. Because if you're doing we say cherry jello, it can't be green, you know? And you got to get that color just right. And we'd sit there in this 2,200-foot candle of light, which is very, very hot, and rehearse and precise. And yeah, it was a lot of work.
But you want to go right back with the right thing?
Not with another kid show 5 a week, I've got to confess. I wouldn't do that. No, that's too tough. No, I'd like to be a commercial spokesman for somebody. Get me a good job. Be my agent.
Well, listen, we have to plug your liquor store because in case anyone's in the neighborhood of New Rochelle and wants a good bottle of scotch, where do they come?
When you're low in spirits, call the Buffalo. How do you like that? Hey.
But it's not called the Buffalo Bobs. I was rather surprised.
No, well, you know. No.
Not, you know, I don't want to push.
No, can't push it, no.
You want to tell them the name of it?
No.
You don't?
Oh, it's Waikiki Liquors. How do you spell it? W-Y-K-A-G-Y-L. First letters. And would you kiss a girl you love? Yes, sir.
Well, I'm going to sample a bit of that as soon as we finish this recording.
I'll go with it.
I don't remember. How did Howdy Doody sign off? How do you want to say goodbye to everybody?
I'll tell you how we used to sign off on Friday night. We'd have the picture of the church. We'd have the church bells ringing. We'd have an organ in the background. And I'd say, kids, When you hear the church bells ringing this weekend, that's your opportunity to enjoy our country's greatest freedom, the freedom to worship, the way you wish, anytime, any place. So for Howdy and me, you tell Mom that you'd like to go to Sunday school or to your place of worship.
Thanks very much to Buffalo Bob Smith, New Rochelle, New York. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you, Richard.